Good to see everybody out tonight. Got looking around, seeing if we got any visitors. James, good to see you. We got pseudo visitors there with Mike and Kim. Glad to see y'all tonight. And sure, might have one or two others that I'm just overlooking. If I do, apologize for that. We are continuing our study tonight in 1 Timothy. We'll be in chapter 3 tonight. Tell you what, before we get into the study, why don't we just take a few moments to read through the chapters. Only 16 verses, it shouldn't take us too long. So, I'm reading from the New American Standard Bible. It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, uncontentious, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert, lest he become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. He must have a good reputation with those outside of the church, so that he may not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Deacons, likewise, must be men of dignity, and not double-tongued, or addicted to much wine, or fond of sordid gain, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. And let these also first be tested, then let them serve as deacons, if they are beyond reproach. Women must also likewise be dignified, not malicious gossips, but temperate, faithful in all things. Let deacons be husbands of only one wife, and good managers of their children and their own households. For those who have served well as deacons obtain for themselves a high standing and great confidence in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. I am writing these things to you, hopefully to come to you before long. But in case I am delayed, I write so that you may know how one ought to conduct himself in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and support of the truth. And by common confession, great is the mystery of godliness. He who was revealed in the flesh was vindicated in the spirit, beheld by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. All right. Where we left off last week, just kind of a quick summation, really, of everything. Here's, you know, back in chapter 1, verse 18, Paul, in his writing to Timothy, said, "This charge I entrust to you." And we then went on to talk about, in chapter 2, the prayers that should be made for all men, kings, and all those in authority, talking about men praying, lifting up holy hands, and women conducting themselves as women professing godliness. And had good discussion on that. And then where we had in the second chapter all these nice transitions and stuff here with therefores and like manner this, we have kind of, I put abrupt here, but it's a much more sudden transition that's almost out of the blue of this discussion on leads into overseers. There's not really much of a lead-in into it or transition or anything. So I just thought it'd be good to talk for a second. I think I got this thing too close to my mouth. I can hear myself going. That's okay. That's all me here. I didn't wear a tie or anything, so it's in the wrong place. So I just thought it might be good just to ask the question, how or does this discussion on elders and deacons fit into this charge that he's entrusted to Timothy? Okay. Anything else? I think you're right. Any other thoughts or anything? I actually sent out questions earlier in the week, and a few more questions, and I think I cover them all in the slides. This was the first one. But any other thoughts? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think too, when you go back to the very beginning of the letter in verse 3, he talks about, you know, he had left him in Ephesus in order that he might instruct men not to teach certain things, but to set things in order. In Titus's letter, he writes to Titus that we'll talk about more this summer. It's very similar type things here about setting things in order. So I think that when you look at it, while there may not be a real smooth transition from what he's talked about in chapter 2, it is continuing with, hey, here's things that need to happen, especially when you talk about at the end of this chapter. He's writing these things so that one may know how to conduct himself or as a member of God's household. Okay, so all these things fit into that general framework. How we're fitting into his household, how we're carrying out the charge that's given to us. Specifically, Paul talking to Timothy, but it's the charge that we all have in trying to bring others to Jesus and to help them be saved. So, with that, we start off with bishops and overseers. And let me just ask you, what does chapter 3, verse 1 say about this work? Okay. It's fine. Everything. Yeah. Yes, sir. Okay, I was waiting for somebody to throw that one out. Is that when you look at specifically what the words say, is that what it says? He says he desires a good work. And I think that that part's implied. I believe it's sound to say that the person who's going to hold the office of overseer must desire the work. I think 1 Peter 5 verse 2 says it a whole lot clearer. Because if you want to flip over there real quick, talks about, just picking up in verse 2, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain, but with eagerness. That plainly says, you're not to do this, hold this office under compulsion, but do it voluntarily. What 1 Timothy 3:1 clearly says is, it's a good work to desire. There's a lot of things in this world we could desire to do that may not be worth our time. This is worth your time. This is a good work to do. Now, implied in that, if it's a good thing to desire to do, then you should desire it before you do it. So I think it's implied in there. I just like, if I've got a verse that plainly says it, I like to go to that verse instead of trying to get lost in all the implies and stuff. Yes, sir. Okay, now see where you worked. I was trying to figure out exactly where you were going there for a second, but I got it. It's still in there. And I think you're right there, because implicit in the way he's saying that is, kind of going back to one of the things, that there's a lot of things you can desire to do. Those other things may not really be worth your time. This is something that's worth your time to desire to do and everything there. So we have that. So it's a good work to desire to do. So, what is a bishop or an overseer? And I mention that because that's the word that's used here. And everything here. But what is a bishop or an overseer? Okay. Let me get... A lot of times, and again, I'm not trying to be overly picky. I'm really not. But I do think it's important to realize that while we talk about there may be five different words that are in our mind are interchangeable, whether you're talking about an overseer, a bishop, a pastor, a shepherd, or an elder, those words all have different meanings. And because they come from three different Greek words. The first word there is the word that's used here that means bishop or overseer or bishop, I read backwards. Presbyteros is elder. Then the last word there is translated either shepherd or pastor. Any guesses as to what the difference is between those three words? Because they all are applied to the same position. These aren't three separate offices. They're all applied to the same office. But any idea what the differences are in those words? Go ahead. Yeah, get way back in the back. I may not see you. Okay. Okay. Good. Any other thoughts?
For the elder, put forth the idea of experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as y'all are all in the same line of what I was thinking. I don't know if anybody else had anything there. The way I kind of split them up was when you're talking about bishop or an overseer, it kind of is talking about the office type of thing here. Elder is getting toward, it's really talking about age, that you're not talking about somebody that's young, but you're talking about somebody who's more mature, who's got experience. And then the shepherd or pastor seems to get more to the work itself in some ways because you're feeding, you're shepherding a flock. Is there overlap in there? Yeah, especially between overseer and shepherd. But they are, like I said, I think it's just good to note that they are different words, so there's a little bit of difference between them, type of thing here. So, and here, given that, he uses this word, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it. Thank you, what he said. He uses that word throughout here, this chapter, when it's going through this list of qualifications, characteristics, qualities, traits, whatever word you want to use for what we're about to get into. So, again, just a little note, but they are talking about the same office. I'm not trying to say they're not. Yes, sir?
You've got Acts chapter 20 up there, and I think it's instructive to look at that case where you look at Acts chapter 20, what it ended up with 17.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then he has this discussion with them. So he's talking to this group of men described as elders. And then if you go to verse 28, mm-hmm. Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock of mm-hmm. The Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherds. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And they do really just point out different aspects of the work and of the character and quality.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point. All right, any other thoughts here before we keep going here? Okay. Overseers of God's household. Okay, so in verses basically 2 through 7, we have these, I just say qualities. We talk a lot about qualifications to be an elder or such. I rephrase that a little bit. These are the qualities that overseers are to possess. Just for the sake of time, I wasn't going to go through and do an exhaustive review and stuff of each one of these. But more just to kind of take a step back and just kind of ask, when you look at those qualities that a man who's being considered for an elder, to be an elder, overseer, shepherd, what do those qualities, what do those characteristics tell you about the man? Okay. Anything else? I mean, when you're looking at this, and let's take the first one there about above reproach. Does that mean he's perfect?
No.
That he's never sinned, never done anything wrong in his life, or anything. But what's the idea behind that? Doesn't need to be rebuked. Okay. When I was looking at this, there's different other words that came up were not open to censor, irreproachable, unrebukable was one of the words that were there. So you've got a man here who can pass the test, so to speak. He's not going to be perfect, but he's got good character and he's proven himself. And I think that's when you're looking through there, you got not only men of good character in general, but they can control their emotions. They control their feelings. They are not going to be lashing out to people, which can be tempting at times, trust me. But they can control themselves in these situations here because they're overseeing. And I like that when you think, to me, when you think about these traits, especially that in that first column on the your left, my right. When you think about those, when you apply it to a shepherd over sheep, and you think about sheep and how a shepherd is shepherding that flock, he's not out there with a whip or anything, driving cattle or anything. He's leading sheep because they're gentle animals and everything. That's the kind of man that you need there. But not only that, need somebody when you're talking about the way I just kind of group these into these four general buckets, so to speak. You look at his home life. He's the husband of one wife, but he manages his own house well, having his children under subjection with all submission, with all reverence, or your version may read a little differently than that. So why is it important to look at his home life, to look at the way he conducts and manages his household? Tells us in verse we just read here, in verse 5. But why is that important? Yeah, okay, it takes some of the same skills. I heard somebody else talking. Yeah. Yeah. Although, everything there said, I think all applies and is right. Everything. When you look, because the way I kind of put it is, a man's household is going to be a microcosm of him overseeing the Lord's household. Because that's what we're talking about here. So, if Gregor and I can't manage our own households well, how in the world can we manage a household of 150 to 200? So you get a good indication there. And, I like the way it talks about they're having their children under submission with all reverence. I was going from New King James there. His children under control with all dignity is the way the New American Standard reads it. Everything. Because when you're looking at that, and you're seeing how he deals with his children as they're being raised. Now they're getting closer to older and obeying the gospel. And when they maybe screw up a little bit or whatever, how does he handle those situations? everything there. That's all, in a lot of ways, a good training ground for us, but also for y'all to be able to see, okay, how do we handle those things? Everything. How do we manage those? Because if we have a child that's really difficult or whatever, how are we handling that situation? Everything. So, there's just a lot of good lessons you learn through that. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yes. I would echo that. Thank you. Yeah. No, and that's absolutely true. And I'm glad you mentioned that. That's usually a point I try to make, but I forgot. So I appreciate the reminder. Because when you look at that, outside of one or two things, maybe three, those do apply to everybody. Doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman or anything. Woman can't be the husband of one wife. You know, but you know, there are ones, what, there's onesie twosies, but well, like these days, who knows? But not right. but when you're looking at the characteristics themselves, those traits, that's something that we all should be striving for. Everything here. If we're husbands, we ought to be trying to manage our households well. If we're wives, we ought to be doing what we can do to support that as well. We ought to be striving to be able to teach, but all aren't necessarily able to teach at certain levels, but they can help. They can plant the seed and go get somebody who can help. Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
And that's why there's that's why elder is an appropriate term, because this is a man who by experience has grown and refined these characters. It's rough. These are Christian virtues,
mm-hmm.
and these are men who have them to a degree
right.
and maturity that they ought to be leaders.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Anything else as far as verses 1 through 7 that jumped out at anybody that I don't have maybe listed on the slide or something that's up there that I just forgot to mention? I think one thing, too, when you talk about the things that are here over on the right-hand side, spiritual and the world, not only able to teach but not a novice, I like the way the New American Standard, not a new convert, lest he become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. I think that's a good warning in general. You know, like I said, obviously it's good when considering a man to be an overseer. But I think it's a good warning overall, too, is that, hey, you know, sometimes when we're new converts and we're full of excitement and everything, we think we're ready to go conquer the world and stuff here, sometimes it's good to kind of pull the reins back just a little bit because we might get ourselves into a little bit get ahead of ourselves a bit and get ourselves in situations that we may start thinking more of ourselves than what we should. And that, which is what this is talking about for the elder, is that you need that person. It goes back to that maturity, goes back to that experience that, okay, I've been here around the block. When I was 20, that might have got my head going a little bit now. Okay, big deal. Not going to worry about that too much. So I think, you know, it's just a good idea there. And when talking about the having that good reputation. Those, when it says here in verse 7, a good reputation with those outside the church. I think that's significant when you stop and think about it. You know, those outside the church may not look at things exactly the same way we are, but when you're talking about men of good character, men that they see at work and they do a good job, that they carry out their responsibilities well, that they trust at work, or good being good neighbors, that they're glad to have them as a neighbor, that they know that they can trust them, that they look out for each other, whatever the case may be. They see that, and that's recognized, whether you're talking about that within the context of the church or not. That's just having good character and conducting yourself well is recognized by those out. So it's one that maybe, I don't know if we'd necessarily pass by it quickly, but it's good to note that. Okay? All right. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's really good. And when I was putting this together, I got to thinking a lot about that type of thing. And I don't know if Greg can chime in on this, but you know, I'd heard many a lesson in my lifetime on the qualifications for an elder and everything. But so to speak, now that I'm on this side of the fence, as opposed to when I was hearing those for most of my life, all of a sudden, those start taking on a new meaning. I see the importance of that, maybe in a little different light. Where, everything you laid out is exactly right, and I think we can see it. But when you're kind of on this side of it, and I don't know if you've noticed the same thing, you see it from a little bit of a different angle, and it takes on, I don't know if I want to say a different meaning, but a very special meaning in there on why those things are important as you're dealing with people, just as you were talking about and everything. Yeah. Very much is. All right, good thoughts and everything here. I had this thing here. We kind of talked about this. Is there anything anybody wants to add why these qualities are important for an overseer? We've kind of talked about all that, but was there something that you wanted to mention that wasn't brought out? Credibility is good. Okay. Okay. Thing I put in here, you know, looking at it from both the office and everything, and these kind of go hand in hand, and we talked about it, but here you have God. If you want to look at it from God's perspective, He's looking for people who are going to oversee His household. He's got to be able to trust those people, as well as the sheep themselves being able to trust their shepherd, the shepherds, to lead them properly. Everything there. So, you know, when you're talking about an overseer, one of the examples that just popped in my mind whenever I was putting this together was going back to the Old Testament and Joseph's position overseeing Potiphar's household. That's what he had. He had everything at his disposal. He oversaw everything. And so that's, you know, when you're thinking about an overseer, that's kind of pretty much kind of what you're looking at. Except I think I like better the description of a shepherd overseeing a or shepherding a flock type thing, because I think it gets a little bit more into it. But it's the same type of thing. Dan. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. And that's the thing about it. You know, it's not as much when you go to Titus's. You know, the emphasis is there more strongly about, okay, to appoint elders in every city. But when you go back to Acts and you look, we haven't got there quite yet in our Sunday study, but talk about when Barnabas and Paul were going out on their first missionary journey. They visited all these places, established these churches, and as they were coming back through there, what was one of the things that they were doing in those places? Appointing elders there. It was something that was taken care of very quickly and everything. So that's the importance that God puts on this. Okay. So, okay, we've only got 15 minutes to get through the rest of the chapter. So we'll go ahead and talk about deacons. Deacons, when you look at the word, ministers, servants, those who serve. So, deacons, by definition, are servants. Let me just ask, first of all, what's the difference between an overseer and a deacon?
Like the boss man and the worker.
you put the word kinda in front of that, so I'll accept it with the word kinda. Good explanation. Very similar there. And on Sunday, Bill mentioned, as we were in chapter 6 of Acts then, and we got to talking a little bit about then, about, hey, the relationship. The word elder and deacon is not mentioned in Acts chapter 6, verses 1 through 7. But I tell you, the principle, thank you, the principle of it, is certainly, of both are certainly there. Because you have the apostles there, their focus was the oversight, but especially on spiritual matters, feeding the flock there spiritually. And there was a work that needed to be done. Peter and the other apostles didn't say, hey, what you're talking about, they weren't saying it wasn't important as far as taking care of the Grecian widows. But we can't just take the time away to do that. So let's find some men who can oversee that work, who can take care of that work and everything so that we're not distracted from it. So that's exactly what they did. If those seven men weren't getting the job done, well, they would have gone back to Peter and James and John and all that and said, hey, we need to find another solution here. But those men got the job done, apparently, and they oversaw that work. And that's exactly what the deacons here do. They have a work here. We're not, Greg and I aren't in there all the time asking, you know, detailed questions, except just to Scott. But you happen to be on the front row, so sorry. But, you know, they are overseeing that work. We may ask them questions on occasion. They may come to us and ask for some guidance or anything. But they have a work, and they're taking care of it and everything. We're, you know, and that's fine. We've got to concentrate on other things. Not saying we're not involved, not saying we're not aware, not saying we don't care, but we've got our job to do as far as overseeing the flock. They are doing us a great service in taking care of those works that they do. just like in Acts chapter 6. Okay? So it's by exactly the same principle that was taught there. Okay? So when you look at these qualities, what jumps out at you here is, are these drastically different than what was we just looked at for an overseer? I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but are they like 180 out from each other? No, they're very, very similar. Very, very similar things here, especially, you know, men of dignity. Not double-tongued, not addicted to wine, not fond of sort of gain. All those things were talked about before. Holds to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience, very similar to what we were talking about. Here's a very specific thing. I think this is a good principle, not only for this, but anything you're doing when you're talking about putting somebody in charge of something. You test them first. And I think that's important. You know, we're talking about an elder needs to be somebody who's not a novice. But when you're talking about this work, and I like the way you put it, Bill, in terms of, okay, the focus is on the work to be done. Okay, you're going to turn over a significant work to a deacon to oversee and make sure it gets done. You don't turn that over to somebody that you haven't seen him do something to give you a level of confidence, yeah, he can do the work type of thing. So he's tested. You have confidence in him that he knows that he can do that. Husbands, one wife, and good managers of children in their households. All similar, but in a little bit different vein than what we're talking about with elders. Yes, sir?
Could you elaborate a little bit on holding the mystery of the faith?
I should have taken that off. Before I kind of jump in, let me just get y'all's thoughts, because that's a great question. What do you think we're talking about here when we're talking about when Paul mentions to in verse 9, but holding to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know how other versions read that, but Greg, well, James, what? Okay. Okay. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's getting close to one of the things I was going to mention here. Any other thoughts? I think everything is said is absolutely correct. I think, too, another verse to go to would be verse 5 of chapter 1. Because it talks about there that, but the goal of our instruction is love from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith. And when we talk about what good conscience was there, it's very similar to what Greg was just talking about as far as having that clear conscience on what we're doing, that we're driven, we understand right and wrong. We've got a good, solid moral compass that's guiding us. And I think that that's the thing about it. You've got men who hold to the mystery of faith. Not saying that they don't understand it, but I appreciate what Casey mentioned. That's still being revealed right now at this time. But they hold to that. They've placed their trust in Christ. They're holding on to that faith that was going to see them through all the challenges that they are going through or may be going through at some time. to get them to the other side. And they do that out of a clear conscience, a solid belief and conviction that that faith is well placed. And those are the men you want in these positions. That they have absolute clear direction and confidence in the Word of God and know exactly where they're going. And I think that that's important what this is getting to. On top of what everybody else was saying. Along with what everybody else was saying. Okay. Quickly. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not answer me.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you're what you're saying there is along the same lines of what we were talking about is that because what you have here is these men are going to be put over. If you want to call it individual works, as opposed to overseeing the entire congregation, but they have very specific responsibilities. Well, you need men of good character and have not only good character, but proven character and proven ability to oversee a work. They've been tested and can do it. So you're looking for those men. So that is similar to what he was talking about in, as far as an elder. Elder is a little bit more widespread or a bit of other things, but we are talking about men of good character.
Yeah,
real quickly.
We saw in Acts 6, look for men of good reputation,
right.
Full of wisdom and the Holy Spirit.
Right. All right, let's see here. Quickly, the next, in verse 11, and this is just interesting to me how, okay, he talks about deacons, then in verse 11 he talks about wives, and depending on the version you may have, it may say their wives. And then next verse or two talks about deacons again some more. So, the question that I had here, just talk about whose wives are you talking about? The deacons, or is this applied both to the overseers and deacons' wives? Yeah. And that's the thing here. I think when you're looking at that, it certainly applies to both. Even if he is talking directly about the deacons, it would certainly apply to the elders' wives as well. So why talk about their wives here? That's a good point. Everything here. Any other things? Just to move quickly through here. Here's what I said. You know, they're not the elders. They're not the deacons. But let's face it, they're in a unique position and everything here that these traits that we're going to talk about reflect. Whether you're talking about just from, hey, not putting their husbands in a difficult position, but also to there could be some things said or whatever, then you want people there that understand that and can handle that or whatever. I think it's funny, on occasion that we'll make an announcement or something here on something, and Leon will tell me later on. She's homesick, by the way, if you're wondering. She's keeps going up and down on stuff. She'll tell me that, yeah, somebody would come up to her at the services. Well, I guess you've known about that for a while. She's like, no, I found out about the same time you did. or maybe I mentioned something to her in the car as we're coming in, or something like that. So it's not like we're sitting there giving a data dump on everything that's going on or whatever, but at the same time, there may be some things that I need to get a perspective on. And I can talk to her about that within certain guidelines or whatever the case may be. And when you look at those traits, that's what you're looking for. You got somebody who's dignified, they're grave, honest, they're not gossips. but they're temperate, discreet, vigilant, sober. They're aware of things. And they're trustworthy, faithful in all things. Okay? And I tell you what, Sheldon's over there getting ready to ring a bell. So this is actually probably a good place to stop. Because one reason why I say that is that when you get to this part of the chapter 3, I kind of wonder, you know, on one hand, it's a really good wrap-up of what we've just talked about, but it's also a great transition into the things we're going to talk about. So we can pick up here and include it as part of our discussion on chapter 4 next week. All right. Thank you all very much.